Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood.
Hello, film listeners. It's going to be one of those ones. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're going to be talking about Interstellar, reading some of your bloody letters.
Yeah, and we're also going to be talking about the film of our guest here, Mr. Dave McNeil.
Hello, thanks for having me back, guys. It's a pleasure as always.
I was trying to spread it out as long as possible, so I guess I have to sit there in silence because I can't really say anything until the name's mentioned.
Well, shall I edit this bit out and then we'll just talk?
No, let him talk.
So I can say anything, that's all I want now, if you're going to edit it out.
What films have you brought us previously, Dave? Do you remember?
The last... I don't think I brought one in the last time. I think we talked about A Field in England.
And okay.
The time before that, it was The Wild Geese, which was my Fandango debut.
Yes, it was. Good film, Wild Geese. I hadn't seen that one before.
Yeah. It's a cracker.
Yes, well, I'm looking forward to this week's cracker.
I only watch films from the 70s, so it's,
Well, first of all, before you two start banging on like you were in love with each other... Yeah. Let's talk about Interstellar. I went to go and see it. It's a blooming blockbuster. Space blockbuster. It's such a blockbuster, you can't... You can't say blockbuster in space.
You can't. In space, no one can hear the word blockbuster.
Yeah, that's how they know when they've gone into orbit.
Blockbuster check.
Blockbuster.
There we go.
We're in space.
It is Christopher Nolan's latest offering... starring Matthew McConaughey and really annoying...
Anne Hathaway?
Yeah.
Do you not like Anne Hathaway?
No.
Why?
Overly sincere.
You want a bit of insincerity from your actors? Bit of sarcasm in the eyes that they're not really into it.
She's overly sincere in everything.
Okay.
It's set in this... I'll tell you a bit about it, shall I?
Yeah. Please.
Well, for one, it's very bloody long.
Yeah, well, it's a Nolan, isn't
Typical
it?
Typical Nolan.
He's now that he can sort of has a license to print money, he seems to be able to. No one's going to edit down his films at all.
Yeah,
you see some of his commercials.
Well, it is going to space, so does take quite a long time. Matthew McConaughey is living in this sort of. There's no date set in the future where the dust is coming on Earth and it's gradually losing its...
2067.
Something around there, maybe. Yeah. I don't think it's that late, even. Something's happened, all the crops are dying, and Matthew McConaughey somehow gets recruited by this space station, and he used to be a former pilot, and goes into space to find a world that can save the human race.
Well, you mean the human race is going to move to it?
Well, that's the plan, yeah.
Exodus.
I mean, that's a plot.
It's been done very many times before, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It has.
It's a bit like Noah's Ark, isn't it?
The entire overarch of Battlestar Galactica.
That's very true.
And
there's Sunshine, of course, the Danny Boyle one, but this is a bit different.
And the Animals of Farthing Wood, of course, was exactly that.
That's what he based this off.
I think it is.
It's a cross between the Animals of Farthing Wood and Battlestar Galactica.
Or Contact, probably, which another space film with Matthew McConaughey in it.
But why should you go and watch this film? I watched it at the Muscle Hill Odeon. I'm going to moan again about the bleed from screen three, the small screens. It was a really terrible bleed coming in from the noise. It shouldn't be allowed.
It's too light in there as well. You can see all the sort of signs.
Did they leave the lights on?
Well, no, but it's like one of those really Art Deco sort of old cinemas.
Oh, yeah. Not the big one, not the big screen. Oh, you went like screen one. I was in screen three. Now, subsidiary the small screens. And they
so where was the bleed from? From screen one?
From screen
one.
Two. The one next door.
Well, anyway. That's not good enough. I mean, not to bang on about this every week, but cinema is an event. And if they're not making it event worthy, then you may as well stay at home.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Bullshit me.
So I think ideally, there's like a 2001 film that, and he was, Christopher Nolan was saying he that everyone should go and watch it in 70mm, you know, so it looks much more beautiful. You should go and see it in the big screen because I think you can't really grasp the epicness of it.
The scale.
Yeah. And Hans Zimmer did the soundtrack, which is amazing.
Yeah, his stuff's always really good.
I'm glad someone's giving him work because he rarely scores films.
No, not anymore. No.
I think Christopher Nolan's using quite a lot. He's using Inception.
Yeah.
But it just makes it. I'd be interested to watch it without the sound to see if it was anywhere near as just what it did.
Or just with a swanny whistle under it. See if that ruins it.
Yeah. Or. That song
for 3 hours
without any dialogue at all, and carry on sound effects.
I mean, guys, this is what YouTube is for.
Matthew McConaughey's good, but he's just in that, he does the same character as he's done in quite a few things. It felt like a bit like True Detective. It felt like a bit like a few of the roles he's done recently, the serious sort of brooding Matthew McConaughey that we is now emerged onto our screen. What is great about this is it goes down this space route. And without any spoilers, it just gets really weird and makes some decisions that you wouldn't normally see. You'd only see in French art house films. You wouldn't see in mainstream Hollywood blockbusters. I mean, he's got the sort of power now where he's making films that you watch the trailer and try and make it like this huge, exciting,
epic.
Yeah, it's not. It's quite a long, drawn out film about it's about time. And the passage of time and how it's all interrelated and existence. So it's a bit similar to, what's that one I really liked?
Space One.
No, the one with Hugh Grant acting or playing different parts.
Cloud Atlas.
It's echoes of that in some bits of it. And there's a bit at the end.
Does Matthew McConaughey play a Chinese woman?
No, he doesn't.
Does Hugh Grant?
He only plays himself.
He plays a Chinese man.
Oh, lovely.
And a futuristic dystopian cannibal on a horse.
It's good that he's broadening his range, isn't it?
Yeah, but they're very romantic cannibals on horse.
And likeable.
Yeah, really likeable.
Slightly whimsical, and, yeah. And very English Chinese.
Very floppy hair.
It was the most English Chinese I've ever seen anyone play.
It sounds interesting, Marek. I have to say, I am not that into Nolan, really, as a director. I enjoy bits of what he does, not the whole. Usually. So The Dark Knight I've revisited as people, you know, celebrate as being sort of his first brilliant film. And it's a complete mess. Like, there's some fantastic performances in it, namely from Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
And some brilliantly plotted sequences like the bank heist at the beginning and the making the pen disappear and some of the stunts and the IMAX cinematography of Gotham and all of that. The story itself is an over-bloated mess. And it's a complete mess. And I think he was more exposed as not knowing how to cut stuff in Dark Knight Rises, which is a boring mess. You know, it's actually just as much of a mess as its predecessor, but it's just more dull. And I didn't like Inception that much either. I thought it kept having to explain what it was doing
time. I really liked it. I preferred Inception to this. I really love Memento as well.
Memento's fantastic, yeah. You're right. Memento is absolutely fantastic.
But this is... It feels like I was talking to my friend James Branch, who's a friend of the show on the phone. He said he also preferred Inception to it, because it seemed to have a bit more... it was a bit more plot-driven. It felt like it was just hanging off this idea. You know, when you're watching a film, you think, I can tell this is really, really good. I can tell it's shot brilliantly, the acting's good, and it's a spectacle. But I don't know whether I enjoy it. But I was moved by it. I was sort of trying to still work out how I feel about it. I think that that's what good cinema should be. We've had some... I put on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple of people write in. Do you want to read them out? Maybe you'd like to read this man with a fantastic name. Sam Clack.
Sam Clack! Okay, what's Sam Clack have to say? I liked Interstellar. but it really didn't need to be nearly 3 hours long. Spectacular special effects and stunning sound. A degree in astrophysics / quantum mechanics would have been useful for some of the film's more esoteric elements, of which there are a few. You're making it sound more and more intriguing that it is
intriguing. I mean, there's
lost in space, you know.
You could say that he skips. It's so complex, the science about it. It's about time and the different dimensions, and that's what the film's about. And so there have been some complaints that the science of it doesn't add up. And Nolan recently responded and said, "Oh, it's, you know, this, his primary objective is to make an exciting film, not a blooming science lesson."
Yeah, if you want to learn, then read a book. Yeah.
Yes, right, yeah. We have another email about a Facebook thing about Interstellar from Ben Thomas Highton. He says, just going off what Frank says. Where's Frank? Frank O'Hanlon. I should read that, first of all, it's written about Interstellar. I'll read out what he says. Just back from seeing Interstellar. What voice do I do?
That one you're doing.
Back from seeing Interstellar. It's not an utterly impeccable film.
What's wrong with Frank?
It's really.
I'm worried about
him. He says he's just back. Anyway, it's not an utterly impeccable film. Perhaps with my degree in theoretical physics, I felt really moved by it. Maybe more than that, it was immense. Ooh. It wasn't meant. A friend of mine mentioned that it had also wobbled in a lot of choices of emphasis, which I sort of recognised. The launch of the initial, spoilers here, the launch of the initial rocket, the time skips, and a lot of it really brushed past when they could have done an immense short sequence. And a lot of it was laboured, which could have been moved along quickly, i.e. the beginning. Nevertheless, for my money, it was easily pushing 9 francs. Especially when I compared it to the big, serious, mainstream sci-fi hulks of the last while. Avatar, Prometheus, Inception, Gravity. Whilst Gravity and Inception actually have a fair whack going for them, I felt this was even better still. Then again, I'm a sucker for organ music and robots in the moon vein.
What are you sucker for?
Organ music and robots in the moon vein. As in the moon, that's a brilliant film.
So how do you sum it up, Frank?
He thinks it's good. And also Ben, reacting to that, Ben Thomas Highton, would you want to read that one out, Dave, has written in?
I've actually got my glasses on.
Oh, you are, so. If you read from, I'd say, Interstellar.
I'd say Interstellar was better in some ways than a lot of those films, but I only enjoyed Prometheus less. The third act completely falls apart, and there are some pretty huge lapses in logic. Not to mention what felt like forced sentimentality at times. An absolute must-see on the biggest screen. Some sequences were breathtaking in IMAX, but overall, not one of Nolan's best.
Well, there you go.
Well, instead, I'd give it 8 Marics.
Really?
I
just want him to edit his stuff down. I mean, I've not seen this, but it just sounds from what people are saying, it's just, it's the same again. It's just like, why have you... Why is all this in here?
It's a real skill to make it tight.
I quite like that about... No, because there's loads of padding around it and stuff. And, in some ways, you kind of know what this is going to be like before I even go and watch it. And, you know it's going to be about... It's about 3 hours long.
Yeah.
So you know it's going to be about that sort of length of time, and it's going to be quite... go all over the place and stuff like that. But I quite enjoy that about his films.
I don't know. It frustrates me. Like in Dark Knight, where there's a whole sequence that takes about 20 minutes where he goes to China for a bit. It's like, why? He doesn't need to go to China. Batman fights in Gotham. What's he going to China for?
But you do hate everything Chinese, though, don't you?
Not everything Chinese. I like number 42.
Who doesn't?
The deep fried pork balls.
Oh, dear. Right, so before we get on to your film, should we read a couple of emails?
Do it. You can read the first one, Malik.
Okay.
I'd like to hear from Frank again. He interests me, but he also worried me at the same time.
Yeah, I hope he's better. Feeling better.
So if you do want to contact us, and thank you to all the people who have emailed, what do these people need to blooming do?
Well, you can email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or if you want to bicker with one another, then you can go to facebook.com/filmfandango. or simply tweet us at Film Fandango, or at Mr. David Reed, or at Marek Larwood. And what's yours, Dave? Do you have Twitter?
Yeah, I do. I'll just take my name in capital letters, like I'm shouting it.
At Dave McNeil. Dave McNeil!
Yeah.
Isn't it
okay.
David James McNeil, isn't it?
No, it's just David McNeil. In capital letters.
Is your middle name James?
It is, but I...
Are you named after the England football goalkeeper?
David James, yeah. He's always played a big part in our family. I'm yet to meet him, though.
One day.
Here's an email from Alan from Battersea. And he says, Scottish South London hybrid. hello, David. Hello, American David. I realised that this is a long email, so feel free to speed it up. Blah, 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 blah. I've been catching up with the podcast after a holiday. And I'm just going to do that voice.
Good.
And just past the point where Marek watched the awfully boring Draft Day. I had no intention of seeing it before I listened, but your review told me everything that I already thought was right. Sports films about sport itself, for a very niche audience, and lack anything else going on. And the lack of anything else going on makes for a really dull experience.
Well, how about Goal 2?
Well, I think that...
Or Soccer Dog.
He's continuing. The best sport films are rightly pointed out. Those where a sport is the setting for a larger story. Even the most basic team must overcome adversity to win the big game plots are really about the overcoming of adversity, not the playing with sport in question.
What is the sport in question?
It was about American football.
Oh, right. Was it called Draft Day?
Yes, shit.
It's about the admin of American football, not the actual game.
I love the admin of American football. Can't stand the game. Just
okay. The best of these films I've seen recently was on a plane was Trouble with the Curve, the 2012 Clint Eastwood actor-producing effort. It's about an aging baseball scout realising he's at near the end of his use after a lifetime in the game. The game isn't the important part. Most recently, I saw on long plane trips, more recent films I saw on long plane trips include your recommendation, Cavalry, which was simply excellent. The Lego Movie, which I agree with David was great, if sagging in the middle. And How to Train Your Dragon 2, which was nothing on the first one.
How to Train Your Dragon to do what?
No, How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Do you what?
No, just two.
Doesn't make any sense.
You do what, mate?
That's the unfinished sentence.
Do what?
Two what?
How to Train Your Dragon
To watch How to Train Your Dragon, the first one.
How to Train Your Dragon to be as better so it's as good as the first.
How to Train Your Dragon to watch How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
That's basically the same formula as The Human Centipede 2.
I've not seen it.
No, neither have I. But, interest. But it is a man obsessed with the film The Human Centipede, apparently. Anyway, Marek.
He goes on to talk about bad accents. We talked about that. And he says, my all-time favourite culprit for accents, however, remains Gerard Butler. He can't last two sentences or an accent without becoming Scottish again. In fact, he could barely do his own bloody Scottish accent without sounding ridiculous. See his part in Mrs. Brown to see what I mean. Sounds like groundskeeper Willie doing an impression of Shrek. Anyway, it's time I asked the question. So, given where I was when I saw the film listed above, what's the best thing you've watched on a flight? Something where the tiny screen, low audio quality, and bizarre wee editing didn't matter.
What was the question again?
What's the best thing film you've seen on a flight?
Ooh.
I usually pick quite the wrong films to see on flights.
Ones you wouldn't normally go to.
I usually pick the schlocky, because I go, I'm quite tired, I'm in the mood for something brainless. And so pick schlocky, big budget action films that really, on tinny little headphones and a tiny screen, are really pointless. Things like Pacific Rim or The Wolverine. And it's just, this is terrible. I did watch Flubber on a flight once when I was a lot younger.
The worst thing I've seen is Paul Blart's Mall Cop.
Why did you watch Paul Blart's Mall Cop?
I think it was something like the screen. You know when you're touching that screen, it's touch screen, you're banging your finger against it to try and skip films. My screen was really rubbish. I kept on going to Paul Blart's Mall Cop. No matter what, so I watched that.
I don't think I've ever seen a Kevin James movie.
That is total shit. The best ones I've seen is The Page Turner, which is, what a surprise, a French film about this, somebody turns pages.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And I watched a low budget film, which was really, really good.
What nationality?
It was American.
American, go.
And it was about, I'm trying to find the actress that was in it.
Police Academy 4?
No.
A classic.
You won't have heard of it. It's about a cult. It's about people who try and investigate a cult and get involved in it. And it's called The Sound of My Voice.
Oh, no.
I've heard of that.
And it was shot on a 7D, really cheaply, budget, and it was very good. Sound of My Voice. It's got Britt Marling in it, who's in Babylon at the moment.
Yeah, she's good. She wrote some loads of stuff, didn't she?
I think so, yes. I think she's got...
Another Earth, I think, was one of the ones that she...
Did she write that?
Yeah, she's a very clever girl. Very clever.
Hmm.
I recently saw Total Recall again, speaking of clever girl.
The remake or the original?
The original. Okay. It was on television. And realised that the line from Jurassic Park, clever girl, as he looks off to one side and is and then devoured by velociraptors, is actually lifted directly from Total Recall, which did it first.
Mm.
But if you look online, if you ever Google clever girl, it's always about the meme that was created by Jurassic Park. Quite wrong. Quite wrong.
Mm. Someone always comes in and takes the credit from the rifle people.
From the poor underdog, Total Recall.
I've got a letter here, which we can all... question which we can all talk about before.
Right.
Can you read it out?
Sure. This is from Stephen Higgins, whose voice is...
Iranian.
I think he's put down Scottish on there.
Has he? What's he put? Your screen keeps going dark, Marek. I don't know why.
Like my heart.
Like your heart. There we go.
There we go.
What's he want to be? Cambridgeshire, not Victoria. Oh, that's just it saying he's from Melbourne. I'm going to do this to Sean Connery. Oh, he says he's half Irish, half Maltese. Oh, God.
Oh, my word.
Maltese.
What's Maltese accent like?
Maltese.
Was Freddie Mercury from Malta?
No.
Yes, he was. Just do Freddie Mercury. Yeah.
He was in no way from Malta.
do Freddie Mercury.
His parents were from India.
Same thing.
I've been to Malta 4 times. I can't think what the accent's like. Anyway.
Must have rubbed off on your own accent quite a bit.
Oh, it's probably mine then. Accent, yeah, probably slightly Maltese. Right, it's going to be quite Irish. Sorry if you've seen this already. I'm not sure if I sent it to the right place first time round. Dear Marek, David, and anyone else in the room. That's you, Dave.
Oh, hi.
I was interested by the casting in Tokarev. It turns out that when Aubrey Peebles, the actress who plays the daughter, was born, Nicolas Cage was a reasonable 29 years old, but Rachel Nichols, the mother, was only 13. I wonder if there are any examples you can think of where actors are a completely inappropriate age for the role. It must happen a lot. I guess famous examples would be Ralph Macchio being 27 by the time Karate Kid 3 was made, or Sean Connery playing Harrison Ford's dad in Indiana Jones, even though Connery was only 11 when Ford was born. Thanks for the show. Steve Higgins, Melbourne, Cambridgeshire, not Victoria. P.S. Bad film with blue in the title. Blues Brothers 2000.
Ah, oh, very good. Yeah. Very good.
Marek had a theory that all films with blue in the title were great.
Most of them are.
So there's a couple that break the rule, but yes, most of them are.
Blue Lagoon?
Blue Lagoon.
Yeah, we've done this, mate.
On that question, though, have you ever seen the remake of The Sweeney?
Yes.
It's repulsive. Right? Ray Winston, he's having an affair with his chief superintendent's wife, who's really young, and he's really old, and it's just, there's a sex scene in it which is one of the most repulsive things I've ever seen. It's literally like an old man obviously having it away
with Hayley, what's her name?
Yeah.
Well, more and more they do that with Nicolas Cage in things. Tokarev's one example, but there was one where he's got a romantic thing with Amber Heard, I think. It's just like, oh, this is grubby. I know if they met in real life and fell in love that would be fine, but you just have to watch it.
You've got to have to imagine the mechanics of them actually filming it as well. Like, because it's a bit where he starts going, ooh, come here.
It's like a prune rubbing up against an apple. It's wrong, isn't it?
But they were all like that, though, in the old... I watched the Curse of Frankenstein the other day with Peter Cushing. I can't remember the lady in it. But he was clearly, you know, 25 years older.
Yeah.
All the old stars were much older. But I think his good point is actors who are the wrong age. About Ralph Macchio is quite good for Karate Kid.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I couldn't believe when someone told me he was like 27. You're convinced that he was just 14 or 15.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of any examples now.
Let's all
think for a while.
Let's all have a moment breaking the podcast.
I heard a rumour, I think it was, I would have to look this up now, that Sharon Horgan played Johnny Depp's mum in something.
He's older than
he's
her.
He's older than her.
Oh, no.
I think.
Wow.
That's what the British climate does to you.
I think
though,
it was Sharon Horgan.
That might
have been
really
someone else.
Wouldn't it?
Might have been someone else. Yeah, I mean, Johnny Depp looks young. I mean, he has a relationship with Amber Heard as well in the Rum Diaries, and he's how old is he now? He's
70.
Is he 70?
He's 70.
70 hundred.
Well, if you want to write in, we've done that before, haven't we?
You've done that already, mate.
And also, thank you very much for your donations helping us to fund the podcast. Really, really appreciate it. It's very kind of you all to help us keep going. If you want to do that...
Shall I do it?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for everyone who's donated already. We do this for free, so your donations are the reason we keep making it and are able to keep making it. So, if you'd like to donate because you're a regular listener to the podcast, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there.
Thanks very much, everyone, as already. Let's go on to Taking a Pelham 1-2-3. Tell us, what's it about?
Well, I think all the films I've chosen since I've come to do this have been one of those ones which you turn on the telly quite late at night and you start watching it and you just can't turn off. And
yes.
And you go to bed about 4 a.m, so you have to see it through to the end.
Pelham 1-2-3 is probably the archetypical one of that film.
It's perfect. I mean, it's set in New York. When New York was grubby and dirty and crime was all over the place, before it got cleaned up in the sort of mid-70s. And it's set on the New York subway system, and Robert Shaw plays like a British mercenary who hijacks one of the carriages of the subway. And Walter Matthau is the police officer who tries to stop him on the way through it. But it's so brilliantly scripted. It's such a fast, witty, quick-moving film. The whole thing feels like a roller coaster all the way through.
Yeah.
It doesn't let up for a second. There's no sort of down moments, and it's so funny and smart and just sort of bam 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 all the way through. It's just a really brilliant film.
It is the sort of originator, potentially. I think it is quite original. I mean, obviously there will have been thrillers and stuff before, but it is clearly an influence on films like Speed or any of the train genre now that Tony Scott got obsessed with in his latter years.
It was a big influence for Quentin Tarantino on the films that he made as well. I mean,
really?
in fact, actually, in Reservoir Dogs, the reason why the characters called Mr. Blonde and Mr. Blue are based on the characters from The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Right.
And it was, I mean, you can kind of see it's that sort of really pulpy, everyone kind of trash talks each other. It's very, very, very New York, which kind of offsets the Robert Shaw's British accent really, really well. It's like, I'm taking a train. And it's, but everyone's sort of swearing at each other, and it's like really sort of enraged New Yorker. Hey, what the hell does he keep doing? He's stopping in the tunnel. And it's but everyone's really angry. The mayor's basically trying to get voted back in, and everyone's booing him wherever he goes. It's just a really witty, funny film.
I mean, you really get a sense of the town. It's quite interesting. You really get a sense of New York from it, and the sense of the culture and how everyone talks to each other. All the workers in the underground section, the way they all. There's some sort of hierarchy there, and the way they're already quite brash and quite rude, and that gives a real sense of the city as well.
Yeah,
great.
I mean, the subway is still exactly the same. They may have cleaned up the city, but the subway they've done nothing to. It's still a baffling, dirty mess.
There's one bit where Walter Matthau has to show these members of the Japanese subway authority around the thing.
It's a really good way of introducing the actual taking some people on the tour.
Showing Japanese tourists around your film.
It's an odd thing. So, we'll show Japanese tourists. And think, can you get away with that? Yeah, you can get away with that.
It's how they introduce all of the areas at the beginning of Game of Thrones as well. They just take a group of Japanese tourists around.
And this here is the operation centre where most of the film will be taking place. But Oh, what was it? It's the opening shot of Walter Matthau. He's literally having a bit of a snooze as well. So yes. It's kind of quite nice. Sort of, it opens up on him like dribbling out his mouth.
I like a snoozy old man protagonist. I don't like these young jumping over barriers heroes.
He's not even that. How old was he?
But in his style, isn't he? He's not a John McClane figure at all.
But in your head, I was watching it, thinking, in my head, I think Walter Matthau's this really fat old man who basically the inspiration for the main bloke in Up. But you look at him, he's actually in shape. He's just got the old face. But the cast is Robert Shaw, amazing. Walter Matthau. Just these fantastic leading men who aren't the traditional good-looking ones. Just brilliant faces.
Brilliant character. It's got, what's his name? Elon's, I can't remember the pronunciation. He's in loads of, he's a brilliant American
Hector Elizondo.
Yeah, he's in loads of, I think he was in The West Wing or stuff like that, but he's brilliant in it as well. He plays like this really sort of unhinged brass, he's a psychopath, he's absolutely fantastic in it.
Yeah, and Martin Balsam, he was brilliant as Mr. Green in it. The acting's great. And like you said, we talked about all these films, Christopher Nolan films being long. The pace of this is like a train going, you know.
There's no waste on it at all. Literally every single thing in it is for a purpose. So every scene is like something that's because that needs to happen or that needs to happen. And it's just the dialogue in it is just so witty and just fast paced. And it feels really, really realistic. I mean, I've never actually been to New York, so I don't know. But just the way that people talk to each other, it's really sort of like bam, 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 bam.
It feels to me, because New York is such a character in so many films as well. I mean, in that way, that there is a New York style of speaking and a sort of attitude to everything that. Just in the same way there is a London one, but the New York one seems to be more entertaining to watch than people just being horrible to each other. But Ghostbusters, I think, probably evokes it in a similar way, you know, where you just get this sense of the place.
Yeah, like a big city. No,
whereas actually the Spider-Man films, I think, fail to do that, where New York is... Is it New York, actually, Spider-Man? Yes, it is, isn't it? And you don't get a sense for that. It's all rather clean and there's no... It's older films that really got that. I think.
That sort of feeling. And Ghostbusters is a very good one for that. After that film came out, though, the subway authorities wouldn't let a train leave Pelham at 1:23 for years. I think they do now, but they wouldn't do it for years afterwards as a superstition, just based on that particular film. Because the reason the train is called Pelham 1:23 is it leaves Pelham at 1:23. So that's the name of that particular train.
So there's a they were afraid of copycat acts of terrorism.
They're very...
Because terrorists love movies.
Yeah, they do. And they're very superstitious people, the New Yorkers, as well.
Yeah.
They should... You should do that. Give yourself a name. And second half, be what time you left the house.
Yes, I'll be David...
10:25.
I left about 12:40 to get here.
Is it the first time you left the house?
Today?
Yeah.
I went to the garage to get some oranges.
What time was that?
That was quite about 9.
So what would it be? David about nine.
David 905.
I like David 905.
Sounds like a robot from the island.
I'd be David 1230.
Are you going to do that way? Are you not David 12:30.
Well, 12. I left before 12:30. Actually, it'd be more David 12. Ooh.
What would you do if you? What would you do if you're talking to me? You haven't left the house.
If you do what?
If you haven't left the house and you're talking to someone,
you're zero.
Zero.
You don't have any name or any title.
I was doing. I was just doing 2-0.
Have you seen the remake of Pelham 1:23? Yes, starring Denzel Washington as the voice of Walter Matthau and John Travolta as the baddie.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Abysmal.
To be fair, it's not.
It's an all right. Is it Tony Scott?
This is what I alluded to briefly earlier. Tony Scott, his last two films before his untimely death were Pelham 1:23 and then Unstoppable, another train movie with Denzel Washington.
Just think what Denzel should be doing now, be on about his 8th train movie.
It would be, just constant train movies. I wonder if his train obsession is what finally did for him.
Denzel the Tank Engine.
Denzel the Tank Engine. That'd be great.
The Denzel Children.
Very good. I think it's more.
Yeah,
everyone think about trains.
The Denzel Express.
Oh,
Murder on the
Denzel Express. Well, I was doing Polar Express.
Mine would be Murder on the Orient Denzel.
Yeah. Or Denzel on the Orient Express.
The Cassandra Denzel.
Yes. Oh,
good.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a fun game you can play at home, putting Denzel Washington into your train film.
Training Day. He's already in.
Denzel Day?
It's not a train film, though, is it?
I was stretching the formula.
Denzel Day with Denzel Washington.
Well, good luck, Denzel. And I hope you maybe switch to other, you know,
transport modes genres. Transport.
Well, we did do the plane one, didn't we?
What's it called? Flight.
Yes,
where he plays a drunken pilot.
He probably said, "Is there any way you can sit this in a train?"
Could the plane be on tracks for most of the film?
And can I be the driver?
There's a lot of scenes from the Book of Eli they just couldn't use because he's just pretending to be a train as he goes around the desert.
Yeah, and the spectacular landing makes just him just stopping it.
a brief Denzel.
What's that? A brief encounter.
I mean, this is quite good fun.
Yeah.
Why don't you email us in your Denzel Washington train film? That we'll read out in about 2 or 3 weeks' time and completely forgotten what it's about.
Yeah. If you'd like to, then do email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com.
Thanks, Dave. Are you doing anything?
Do you want to plug anything, Dave?
I don't believe in plugging.
Good man. Well, we'll be back next week when we'll be talking about yet more films.
Turner.
And Hooch. We're going to be talking about, it's an art themed episode next week, where we'll be talking about Mr. Turner and
Denzel.
Tim's Vermeer. So we'll be back next week. Keep watching the films. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.